up in the morning and out to school.
Well, welcome to a very special Juno afternoon. We're going to be talking all about school, about keeping kids in school, and some of the things that happen that make kids think about dropping out, and a lot of the things that we can do as individuals and as a community and the kids can do to help stay in school and to drop back in. We're going to be talking about a special drop-in program that KXLL and KTOO are helping to put together. We're going to be talking to Lori Scanling, who's the Assistant Superintendent of Schools here and is someone who's working with the American Graduate Grant. It's a Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant that's being implemented in Juneau. We'll also be talking to Frieda Westman, who's the President of ANS Camp 70. Christy Smith will be here from Communities and Schools, the Yokosuka liaison there from Communities and Schools. And also be talking to a couple of student success stories. Crystal and Danielle will be by a little bit later to talk about challenges they've had, how they've overcome them, and what other folks can learn from their experiences. Juno afternoon today coming at you in just a minute here. We're going to go to National Native News next.
Drop the coin right into the slot.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian and Manitoba governments are blaming each other for what's being described as an Aboriginal policing mess. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, one reserve says it was forced to create a makeshift jail out of a hockey arena dressing room.
Chiefs in northern Manitoba say public safety is now at risk because the provincial government will not certify banned constables. And in the case of Lac Brochette, provincial authorities have taken away the keys to the jail because the local banned constable does not have the recognized training. And according to the chief, Joe Ansonen, that's forced the ban to keep individuals under detention in the hockey arena.
The reason, the overall why we lost the keys is because of the status. Our banned constables don't have the status.
Weighing in on the issue is the John Howard Society, which speaks on behalf of inmates. John Hutton is with the society.
People shouldn't be kept in those conditions. If you treat people like animals, they're going to act like animals. And chaining someone to a wall is just not acceptable.
Ansonen and other chiefs want the province to train and certify more banned constables. Manitoba says it would train more officers, but says Ottawa isn't prepared to pay. In Ottawa, Public Safety Minister Vic Tave says it's a provincial matter, and it's up to Manitoba to explain why the First Nation was holding people in a locker room. Policing services on reserves is shared between the two governments through an agreement known as the First Nations Policing Program. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The principal chief of the Cherokee Nation is demanding an apology after what he says are racist actions by supporters of a U.S. senator. KGOU's Kurt Gortney has more.
Online video taken at a campaign rally for Republican U.S. Senator Scott Brown shows members of his staff performing tomahawk chops and shouting war whoops. A spokeswoman for Brown says he regrets they were seen making those actions and they've been given their first and only warning against such conduct. The comments came after a second video surfaced showing Brown speaking to supporters while war whoops can be heard in the background. The whoops escalate as Brown criticizes Democrat Elizabeth Warren's claims of Cherokee heritage. Warren is challenging Brown for the Massachusetts Senate seat. The principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Bill John Baker, also criticized the actions of Brown supporters. He said those actions go far beyond what's appropriate and proper in political discourse. A statement from the chief, who was a delegate to the National Democratic Party Convention, also said the use of stereotypical war whoop chants and tomahawk chops are offensive and downright racist and continue to minimize and degrade all Native peoples. Warren has said she was told while growing up in Oklahoma that she had Cherokee relatives, but she's been unable to document her Native American heritage. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
A sacred water protection teach-in was held on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota Wednesday. Jim Kent reports.
More than 300 people traveled from as far away as California, Nebraska, and Canada to attend the sacred water protection teach-in. Some people also observed from Oklahoma and Texas via Skype. The event was organized by Deborah Whiteplume, a Lakota wife, mother, and grandmother. For all these reasons, Whiteplume is also an activist for clean, safe drinking water, both on and off the Pine Ridge Reservation. Whiteplume says the goal of the gathering was to alert people to the increasing dangers posed to clean water sources, including the most recent.
The Keystone XL pipeline will threaten our only source of drinking water, so we have to take a stand against that pipeline because the threat of it contaminating our drinking water is a matter of life and death for all Lakota people.
White Plume notes the Keystone XL pipeline will cross the Miniwachoni Water Project, which provides water to tribal and non-tribal communities across South Dakota. The pipeline will also cross the Ogallala Aquifer and impact the community of Bridger on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. White Plume is planning more sacred water protection teach-ins throughout Indian Country. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
On this day in 1971, the Tanana Chiefs Conference was officially incorporated. It works on behalf of 42 villages in interior Alaska. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Are you under 20 and wish you could return to high school?
Join us Saturday, September 29th for a special drop-in day at Zach Gordon Youth Center.
From 1 to 4, you or someone you know can instantly re-enroll in high school, get free health and guidance services,
free food, and the chance to win some great prizes.
Plus, two teens who choose to go back to school will get a $1,000 internship at KXLL Radio.
That's a high school drop-in day Saturday, September 29th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Zach Gordon.
And that's an event that we're going to be talking about right now with Lori Scandling, who's the assistant superintendent of the Juneau School District. Lori, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Andy.
And appreciate you coming in and talking to us a little bit about, we'll talk specifically about the drop-in day that we're going to be organizing on Saturday. That's 1 to 4 at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. I want to talk a little bit more broadly about some of the issues surrounding dropout and dropout rates and those kinds of things. And I guess just first and foremost, talk to me a little bit about how you see and how you perceive the issue of dropouts in Juneau. Or do we have a particular problem here? And if there is, how is it characterized? What are some of the characterizations of Juneau's dropout problem?
Well, we do have a problem. 1 in 3 freshmen will not graduate 4 years later. But that doesn't mean you can't graduate. I want to emphasize that. It is never too late to come back to high school. And it's well worth it in terms of the lifetime of different opportunities that you'll experience having that high school diploma. And we just know this from the kind of data that are collected over time on high school graduates versus those who do not complete that degree. But our problem is not unique, meaning Juneau is a community that experiences what the United States experiences, and more so than some other countries as well. And that is, overall, we have about a 70% on-time graduation rate. So in that way, we're comparable nationally. I don't think it's a monolithic problem, meaning you can't say, oh, we have a dropout problem because fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. There are multiple stories about situations and experiences that students have both in and out of school that contribute to their not feeling successful, actually experiencing success, or feeling unwelcome or unwanted in school, feeling like they can't find a fit.
Do you think that there's a common misperception about what type of person is a dropout from high school?
I do. I think we probably have a stereotype of the dropout, a kid who maybe isn't very bright or who, comes from that kind of family, whatever that means.
Just as trouble or,
right.
or something
and,
like that.
And really,
yeah.
As I said, there are as many stories as there are youth who are struggling with the idea of staying in school for whatever reason. And our district, and I think districts across the country, are responsible for being receptive of and adjusting its our instruction and how schools feel. Schools are institutions that are oftentimes feel very unlike a student's maybe heritage or culture or home norms. And I think it's challenging when schools are structured the way they were, say, 100 years ago. And that's not to say schools aren't changing. Schools are trying hard to change. but they're not particularly flexible institutions. Now, our district, like many districts, tries to offer a variety of options. We have an alternative high school. I worked there for several years and had some wonderful opportunities to get to know families and students who very much wanted to succeed and did not feel like there was a good fit for them in what we call kind of the mainstream. And we have some other options for K-8. But there are a variety of reasons why youth don't complete high school. And there's a saying that dropping out is a process, not an event.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that early on the student has some learning challenges that aren't tended to well. We know from our data our district is instructionally successful. And again, we have to hold ourselves accountable. If we truly believe that all children are educable and are, you know, beings who can be educated, and we should believe that, mm-hmm. we're in that business, then we should be able to serve every youth who comes through that door. When I hear educators say, oh, those kids, those families, those problems, I say, and I got this from a colleague, that's like a dentist saying to a customer, you got cavities and you came to me? We are those who should be as well trained as we can possibly be to embrace and to support all students. And we don't do that job particularly well for a proportion of students.
Yeah, as part of this program, I got the opportunity to go for the past 3 days and talk to students at the Alternative High School, at JDHS, and at Thunder Mountain High School. And you know, every single kid had a great story, and we're in the midst of their story. You know, they're in the middle of it.
They're
and,
in their journey.
Yeah, they're in the middle of their
easy.
Journey. That's right.
It's
and
not
that's
easy.
Right.
There are some young men and women who are on their own for whatever reason, and there may be a variety of reasons. There are young men and women who are taking care of family members who may need them at home. There are young men and women who are struggling with illnesses, whether it's an addiction that they're experiencing and trying to figure their way out of that, whether it's perhaps a mental health issue that they're struggling with. And sometimes school is not the most pressing thing in their life. And I used to believe and feel when I was working directly with kids in the CHOICE program in Yokosuka-Dokahiti, I felt like getting down on my knees and thanking kids every day for coming to school because I knew so many of their situations and what they were struggling with. Some of them have children. Children aren't easy even when all of the right supports are in place.
Yeah.
But when you're a young person with maybe not having help with the child rearing, not a steady place to stay, it can be very hard.
Also, I think when you're developing, you know, your world around you when you're developing seems so utterly the end of the earth important. So I think, you know, I got stories from kids in the past week of, you know, they were at JDHS or Thunder Mountain and like they had a falling out with a few of their friends. And that was the thing that triggered them stopping doing their schoolwork, and they got essentially what they were describing was like depression. They were saying, you know, really they were getting down and they weren't able to bring themselves to get their work done. They incrementally start falling behind, and after a couple of months they look back and it looks like, oh no, this is, I can't.
The hole's too big.
Yeah,
the hole's too big. I think you capture something really well. And when you think about teenagers, remember, these are young people who have just come into adolescence in the last few years. Their breadth of experience in problem solving and understanding that you can get through things, there are folks who will support you. No, the system may not be the right fit, but there are people within the system who will reach toward you. When you have a very limited experience, it's hard to know those things because your perspective is not lengthy yet. Those of us, you know, in our 50s.
It's intimidating to go ask for help as well.
It is.
If you feel like the institution is this thing that you're fighting against, like,
exactly.
Oh, I've got to fight against it, it's hard to then step out of that, and especially without adult guidance. And a lot of these kids don't have that adult guidance that's engaged that way. So then they have to go try to find some alternative or try to find a way to succeed. And, you know, that's why when you do talk to the kids who are in the alternative program, well, you know, you're just like rooting for them, and you just feel like, boy, these kids are accomplished in ways I'll never be.
And
you know,
it's kind of a sad commentary
yeah.
that it does require a huge amount of strength, perseverance, and courage to stick with a system that can roll right over you.
Yeah.
And again, the system is not monolithic, just like there's no monolithic group called the dropouts. the system is many parts, but as a system, it's less receptive to youth who don't fit into a model where they're able to comply and be conditioned to the kinds of things that schools expect. I mean, our product, yeah. I always say our product is learning and the diploma, and we're not very well resourced to do even that in terms of flat budgets. And to provide the true kinds of levels of social, emotional support that young people need, schools don't do that real well. And it takes a lot of special people, and there are a lot of special people in our system, to come around a kid, even if a kid can connect with one meaningful adult within that system, and to understand that, you know what, this will pass. You will graduate. You can graduate. And you've got probably 60, 70 more years beyond you. It's not just this moment.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about what are some of the specific programs, what are some of the things that the Juneau School District has done and undertaken to help kids who are sort of at these risk periods?
So we were chatting a little bit before the program went on that if there were a dropout profile, if there were a dropout solution, we could probably any school district in the country could just match those two things nicely together. There is no solution, meaning a single solution. There are a variety of things that our district, like many districts, do and have attempted to do. Some that seem to be sustaining and helpful would include the Choice Program. It's a school within a school at Juneau Douglas High School, and those students stay with the same teachers for 3 years, and they go on retreats once or twice a year to talk about how they're doing and to give each other support. So you work within a small team that serves as a family for several years, and you get all your core credits with those teachers as they get to know you and your family. Yakuska Dakahiti has been around since 1995, so it's going on 20 years. Again, it replicates kind of a family environment. They have a regular advisory. When I worked there, even as principal, as an advisor, I had a cadre of students for whom I was responsible for as long as I could stay in touch with them. Even when a student left school, we continued to make phone calls, ask them what their plan was for coming back. At Yakush, you can enter every quarter, and if it's not convenient, we'll get you in as quickly as we can and hook you up with some curriculum. But that close advisor-advisee relationship lasts for years in a very wonderful way. I've been to student weddings. I've been to family memorials. But that relationship is close, and when a kid isn't there, we want to know where they are, and we might go visit them at home, give them a phone call, and ask, what's your plan? How can we help?
And now there's this AVID program as well. Tell me a little bit about
AVID that. AVID is really for what we call the invisible kids, and these are kids who are floating along, coasting, doing okay, generally passing school, but might not have a college-going culture in their family. Typically, they're the first student in their family to ever go to college, and AVID reaches in and provides them an elective during their day to teach them kind of the academic navigation, how to get through this system, and what behaviors and skills will help them be successful. I want to mention one other thing and make sure families are aware of this. We have a program called CARES, which is Credit Attainment, Recovery, and Employment Skills. And CARES runs from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., 4 days a week. And students who have lost a credit can connect with CARES after their regular school day. CARES is housed in Marie Drake. They serve a meal to begin the afternoon. And then students can take either intensives, which are 2 weeks every day, several hours, or a more typical check-in and do academic work every day for an hour, for a quarter. And it's not to repeat a class you took. It's to help you fill in and be confident and competent in the skill sets within the class that maybe you did not pass.
So really shore up your knowledge and really feel like it you've
does.
Got it
and,
down.
And so if you bombed a class, you can connect with CARES. And the kids that I've interacted with in that program seem to like it very much. Again, there's a family atmosphere. They support each other. The class sizes are small. They can get through the credits, meaning complete the portions of the credit that they didn't complete in a time where they can see their progress and feel like they're moving toward a success. I looked at the data, and CARES helped 35 students graduate in the year that just ended who otherwise would not have graduated.
That's great. Yeah.
That's significant. Yeah. That's significant.
Well, let's talk about something, a small piece of this that we're trying to do, which is an interesting thing that you helped suggest, which is the drop-in day that we're going to do from 1 to 4 at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. That's this coming Saturday. And it's a chance for students who've gotten out of school, dropped out of school, or you know, dropped their classes, to kind of immediately get back in and get all the resources there. We've also, as a kind of interesting incentive and bonus and an interesting program, we're going to offer two $1,000 scholarships at Excellent Radio to kids who come back in and want to be part of that program as an extra incentive to kind of stay connected and do a little bit of pretty interesting work as well.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, I know when I had the opportunity to share my ideas about the grant for the Center for Media Engagement, the intent was to raise awareness about dropping out and the positive aspects of graduation. And I think our group felt strongly that we need to do more than just raise awareness, although that's important because the impacts of dropping out, both on the individual and on communities, can be pretty tough. And so we were chatting about, well, rather than talking about kids drop out and, you know, what's wrong with those kids, why don't we say, why don't you drop back in? And when I would visit with students who were contemplating or who had left school, I would often say, don't say you're a dropout. Say you're just stopping out for a while. You can stop out and then restart. So what if we have some restart opportunities here? It takes a lot of courage, particularly if you're an older youth, a young woman, young man, to say, I will go back.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, to think about that is a big
I will go back. I have a
deal.
Job. I have a child. School hours fall when I'm in my job, but perhaps I can take a class at the end of the regular school day and then connect with the CARES program and get some assistance with placing my child in child care, perhaps with a friend for to watch my baby or whatever. So we thought, let's approach this in a proactive way rather than kind of reinforcing the stereotype of the dropout. Let's say, how can we welcome back students who have not felt welcomed in our system or who haven't had the kind of support that they've needed, and create a special day where folks can just drop by the teen, chat with people. We'll have representatives of the Central Council there, principal of Yakus and the counselor. The counselor from Yakus happens to have worked at both other high schools.
Oh, cool.
Kelly Neiman's worked at JD for about 15 years and Thunder since it opened.
Great.
So lots of opportunities
also
to reconnect.
Free food,
and I know there will be Fred Meyer gift cards, bus passes, Eagle Crest passes, pool passes, and then the opportunity, as you mentioned, to kind of document a journey. As you said, kids are on journeys, and to document this journey of coming back to school. And really, success is if one person returns to chase down that diploma.
It's a great way to phrase it. Well, Lori Scandling, Assistant Superintendent from Juneau School District, thanks so much for joining
Sandy.
Us. Thanks for your inspiration on this drop-in day that's coming up. I know you'll be there
well.
And that, once again, is an opportunity for folks who have dropped out of school to come and check out all the resources available to you to help you get back into school, figure out how to make it work for you. And there's going to be all kinds of people there whose goal that day is going to be to help you get back into school and offer you a whole bunch of cool services that'll help you do that.
I have one more thing to add,
sure. Go
and
ahead.
That is, I used to say to my students, so if somebody were to offer you like $250,000 to get your diploma, would you? And of course, that always raises eyebrows. So yeah, heck yeah. And our census data tell us that the youth who finishes high school without even additional training, which in this world you pretty much need, but compared to the youth who does not get that degree, the high school diploma person will earn between $250,000 and $600,000 more over their lifetime. So when people say, you don't pay me to go to school, you know, I hear this teen talk, I'm like, actually, we do.
We do.
It's worth it. The diploma has great value. So I hope we can welcome some students back to school.
Should be a good day. Thanks, Lori.
The mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law.
or what did mama saw? It was against the law. Your mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, we's all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where.
No, Paul Simon. Down at the schoolyard with Julio there, me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Showers are in the forecast for the rest of today, tonight, tomorrow, but wait for next week. Partly cloudy skies starting Monday night and into Wednesday, so we're going to have to do with a little rain before that, but we'll get some good weather. We've got a special program going today on Juneau Afternoon talking about the dropout issue in Juneau and all of the different agencies and people out there that have been supportive of kids in schools. And one of them is ANS Camp 70. I'm with Frieda Westman and Moreno Goodwin. Thanks to both of you for coming in and speaking with us today. And Frieda, let me just get from you, ANS Camp 70's involvement with kids in schools. Tell me a little bit about the involvement.
Well, to begin with, Alaska Native Sisterhood Glacier Valley Camp 70 has been around since the 70s. That's why that name. But also, it's a part of a larger organization that has been around for 100 years. This is celebrating this year, 2012, is celebrating the 100th year of Alaska Native Brotherhood. One of our missions is to work for the betterment of Alaska Native people. And what Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 70 does is work for the betterment of Alaska Native students in Juneau schools. ANS is made up of local camps, and this camp is part of Juneau, Glacier Valley. And so we're all over Alaska. And what we have done in the past, as individuals, we have about 60 members in our organization. We meet monthly. We have an education committee. And we have been involved in the schools for many years. If you name a year, we probably were involved in it.
Okay. And I know that one of the things that you've kind of talked about is the Feed the Minds program. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that's correct. Actually, Mariana helped us organize that particular campaign. And if you want to talk about it at all?
Sure. We actually thought about that to support the district, knowing that they had annual intensive testing, standardized testing that they were putting the children through. So in order to support the funding of it so that children were eating before and got rest and were prepared for taking on, you know, hours of testing, we gathered donations. We solicited from businesses and independent organizations to help to fundraise to contribute to this big pool of resources that we then purchased supplies, food, and the Camp 70 did an extensive work to not only to shop, but then also to distribute that to all the schools. And it's obvious, it's gotten very big. We always, you know, encourage more donations so that we can continue to support the school and our students for those very specific reasons. But more so, we understood the high stakes with regards to testing, and we felt that whatever we could do on the side to relieve a little bit of the pressure for the teachers and the administrators on site and help children in need, we would do.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing of just a kid walks out, hasn't eaten that day, and then they go to test. They're tired in a couple of hours, and test scores show the results. And, it's a great kind of simple step in a way, but when you when you then expand it to a whole school district, it becomes kind of complicated.
It does. And I think one of the things that Frieda talked about is the complexity of our involvement. ANS Camp 70 has been involved in a variety of tiers, whether we've been representatives on the budget advisory committee, on site councils, whether it be in elementary or middle school or in the high school. We've served on the Strategy 2 committee that was dealing with years ago on the Alaska Native success rate and looking at the specifics dropout rates. But we not only have worked with the Native population because we've noticed the disproportionality mm-hmm. of them being represented, whether they be in social services, whether it be in poverty, whether it be in gaps or deficits within the school in testing, but we've looked at all children. We've looked at the cultural responsiveness of how we work with the school district to really to look at, and you had Lori on a few minutes ago, to deal really with the social-emotional framework that's needed in order to create a wraparound so that children feel that they're wanted, that they're valued, that they're needed, and they have a connection to someone in the school to want to stay in school.
Yeah, and they kind of go into school expecting success.
They do.
Not expecting to fail, but expecting to have a successful.
And there's a lot of pressures. So I think we've been able to come in a variety of ways. And I just wanted to add a little bit about that. The other thing about the Alaska Native Sisterhood that's so important is that we are a part of the civil rights movement. The Alaska Native Sisterhood was actually, or the Brotherhood, is actually the first movement, whether you want to call it the Alaska Territory or in the U.S., in the U.S. history, prior to the civil rights movement in the South, in the lower 48. So it's got real tangible historical roots here. And that coincides with, you know, again, I'd like to go back because when we look at the demographics or when we try to demystify mm-hmm. stereotyping of dropouts, mm-hmm. we have to also look at the cultural, historical context of what are systems that are out there and how barriers are created and what do we do to identify those and how do we identify strategies, agencies, individuals, and approaches to reduce those types of barriers. So children not only graduate, and I hope that we can continue this discussion,
right.
but after they get the diploma, what happens? What happens yeah. to them? Can they make it on to higher education? Or if that's not their route, where do they go from there? So I think we need to really broaden our conversation.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I mean, part of the whole one of the big issues and reasons that the Brotherhood started was the treatment of children in schools and you know, getting rid of the native language and those kinds of things were some of the issues that really brought forward the civil rights movement that you refer to. And so it's interesting that this is still something that's being paid attention to and that we're still adjusting to this day.
Well, and you're making a very good point, which ties us back to our legislators who have been essential in creating, you know, and supporting the Alaska History Standard, the half credit that's required for graduating from high school. And there was countless advocates, whether they be educators, community members, parents, organizations. You know, we have numerous Native organizations all across the country and leaders that were participating, as well as not all across the country, but I meant in Alaska, as well as non-Natives that participated in the importance of understanding what happened, what was the social dynamics back then, and what are we doing now about it. And so the state has culturally responsive standards, mm-hmm. and that's so important because many, whether they're in education or whether they're in social services or whether they're in the arts, athletics, or academic nonprofits field, should know those standards because those standards help you to develop a foundation to work with communities. And if you can accommodate and also translate those very basic principles of respect, you can not only apply that for Alaska Natives, you can apply that for families that deal with disability, you can apply that to families that are from the LGBT community, you can apply that to children with special needs. So, you know, I think it's really important when we get this out because the Alaska Native Sisterhood is really hung on to those culturally responsive standards because it's a document that was put out by the State Board of Education. Mm-hmm. That is kind of the walking papers for everyone. And
yeah, that concept of, you know, we're as a whole, we're not being treated fairly if one particular group isn't being treated fairly.
Right, and it's just, and it gives you strategies on how do you do that? How do you, you know, break it down so that you make those connections?
Right.
You know?
Well, Frida, how, if this is such really interesting and really worthy programs, how can people contribute to this? Or how, you do the fundraising and all that, how do people get a hold of ANS in order to say, yeah, I want to get behind this. I think this is a great program.
Well, more than that, I think that people in the community need to be take hold of this idea that when students graduate, it benefits every single person. They should be concerned about graduation rates because it does benefit everybody in the community, whether it's an Alaska Native student that is dropping out or a non-Native student. Everyone should be involved in that. How people can contribute to the Feed the Mind campaign, we have a post office box that we can accept mail at. It's post office box 20213, Juneau, Alaska, 99802. But I do really want to get back to this idea that the whole community, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. That may sound like a cliche, but it isn't. It's the truth. It does require everyone being involved and caring and wanting to help and using everything in their backpack to to help.
Right.
And, you know, even if it is showing up at a school, taking a look around, seeing, you know, is this school comparable to this school? And if it isn't, why is that? You know, there are schools that have many children in poverty, and the majority of the students in that school are in poverty. And when you look across the district at schools where there are children who maybe don't have as many children in poverty, there is a difference. And I think that all of us need to care about that.
Just
all
that,
of us.
Yeah, that presence of the community in schools, I think, is such a key. You're right. I think that, you know, my kid, for instance, is now out of high school. So mm-hmm. I don't go to the elementary schools mm-hmm. anymore. But that's not really serving my community, that part of my community. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to stay
volunteer.
Connected. Yes.
To volunteer. And I think
that's
really an important thing. What you're doing with this grant program about dropping back in, wouldn't it be wonderful if other agencies say, we're going to model this program. K2 is working on this. They're going to offer this stipend. They're going to offer the support to develop these professional skills. Where you're talking about positive behavior skills, you know, things that these children, everyone needs that. Even adults need that. Some have had gaps in their progression and their professionalism. So if you're modeling this, it's like building that as something that can be developed more so in the community to keep on using it. And I think what happens is once our children, and Frida and I, we have seniors that graduated, left to college, and, you know, we're lonesome for them. I still have one that's at Harborview, but I'm still involved, and I try to. And I think we shouldn't be so hard on parents when they can't make it in. They can find some other ways, because I think that's the most difficult part, is how they figure out ways to fit in. Whatever they can give is great. And if the schools work harder to try to connect with families in whatever little way, they can create that network again. It's really, you know, volunteerism is so important, because we don't have enough people to deal with all the different tasks. And you really relieve a lot of stress for the teachers, so that they can handle something more that they're skilled at, and you're copying for them or cutting paper or whatever you need to do.
Well, thanks so much for your involvement in this mm-hmm. Issue, and thanks so much for coming in today. Frida Westman and Raina Goodwin, thanks so much to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Thanks.
She ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout, and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law.
or what their mama saw. It was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Well, joining us next is Christy Smith from Communities and Schools at Yakutsk and the principal of Yakutsk as well, Sarah Moreno. Thanks to both of you for coming in. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And thanks for your involvement in this issue and for your attention to this and for your involvement in our small effort to kind of draw attention to this. It's something that you two are sort of at the front lines of every single day of kind of figuring out strategies for kids who've had kind of a non-traditional path through their schooling years. I mean, speaking personally, I went to high school and then I got out of high school, you know, and it was not too rocky for me. But for a lot of kids, it really is. So, Sarah, first, maybe I just talk to you. What are some of the things that you see happening commonly among students that kind of create these stumbling blocks that you have to help them through?
Well, there are so many different situations with the kids that come to Yakutsk or even kids in our mainstream high schools, JD and Thunder Mountain, that make school challenging. And sometimes it can be issues of homelessness or issues of poverty, not having enough food to eat, not knowing what your housing situation is going to be. There's a lot of students who move in from rural villages where kind of our mainstream traditional schools are a little bit overwhelming when you came from a school where there's maybe six in your class. There are so many unique stories, and sometimes it's pretty amazing that these kids get up every day and make it to school and really work hard at doing what they need to do to graduate.
Yeah, I was telling Lori, who was here earlier, it's just been inspirational just in this past, I know, just in my little past 3 days of talking to kids in schools and really asking them, hey, how did you get here? It's amazing a lot of the work that these kids at a very young age have already done to make sure they're still working. And Christy, what are some of the kind of techniques you try to give kids that allow them the opportunity to continue on in schooling, even though they have these challenges?
Mm-hmm. Mostly I've been really working on how I can reach out to community support. I kind of bridge I develop a bridge between the school and between community members and identify different risk factors and find out which community resource is best to help them out with that. So like Sarah was mentioning about homeless, helping them connect them to any adolescent housing programs, filling out apartment applications, any youth shelters, Cornerstone, helping out with food donations. We get food donations every week, and kids can bag up food, take it home for themselves or to their families, as well as clothes donations. Now it's starting to get a little bit colder, so we definitely have those kids who are going to be needing socks, warm coats, and things like that. And just being able to provide that safety net and surround them on different various aspects is going to promote them to be more in school, more involved.
Yeah, I think it must be so – I mean, I can just think back on when I was a kid. You know, mm-hmm. It must have been so intimidating to go ask for help, mm-hmm. you know, to go to this institution somehow, to the office – right, and ask for help. So I guess I see your role as being that person who's offering that help, making sure you're reaching out to these kids so that it's less intimidating to have
Definitely.
To ask, is that right?
And just being involved, always making yourself available, whether it may not be the best time for you or not. Like when a kid comes up, they're wanting to talk, whether it's you're just listening or whether they're asking for help and like really saying, I need this, can you help me out? And just really being out, being the face they see in the hallways, being involved with school activities and getting to know the kid one-on-one, and also just open ears, listen to your staff, listen to your principal and administrative staff. It helps mm-hmm. out a lot to get to know each student.
Yeah, and Sarah, you were saying it's your fourth year as principal at the alternative high school. Is that right?
It is. It's gone quickly.
Yes, that's pretty exciting. So did you, I don't know your background exactly, but did you come in with sort of, like everyone would, with like a perception or a preconceived notion of, well, this is the kind of kid that typically will come in the door? And did you have some of those that maybe have been, you've reassessed or?
Well, I did have some preconceived ideas. I originally taught at the alternative high school, and before I submitted that application, I was kind of like, do I want to teach at an alternative high school? Because everybody hears those stereotypes, and alternative education is really where my heart is. It's about helping kids who have not found their place, who really want to succeed and do well, giving them that extra support. And that has become my love. And these are great kids with really bright futures if we can find enough ways to support them through their education and take them into adulthood.
And that's the key, isn't it? I mean, as a community, we could just say, hey, you know, these kids can't cut it. Let them cut them loose. And then where are we as a community? Instead of all these great success stories that we can look back on just in the 4 years you've been there and all these kids that you've known through the years that that have found success, that are just in a very, you know, nuts and bolts way are contributing and, you know, paying taxes and have jobs. But in other ways, you know, being part of the community, being positive.
Absolutely.
Part of the community.
And alternative ed kids tend to be those amazing out-of-the-box thinkers. Great problem solvers, because they've had to in order to make it through their young lives. And so they're the kind of people we want out in the workforce, because they will do great things for our communities. And most of them are very community-based. And so when we help out those kids who are just struggling, we're really helping Juneau become a better, stronger community.
Christy, is there a way, you mentioned that you're the liaison that connects to community members. Is there a way for community members to connect to you? And if there's someone listening right now that says, you know, I'll bet I have a service that I could offer. Well, how would they go about that?
They could go through contacting the schools. I'd love to give out, like, my personal information and just find that contact. I try to go to as many different businesses as I can and find out ways that, hey, we're working with the school. How would you like to involve your services? And how would you like to get involved and, like, volunteer? And just contacting the school, any one of the schools. We have site coordinators at the two other high schools. Doug Blank is at Juneau Douglas High School. And Matt Greeley is the site coordinator for Thunder Mountain High School.
Yeah, I got to talk to Matt yesterday after I was out at Thunder Mountain. It was great to talk to him. And it's always really fun to talk to folks who've seen the success stories. I mean, I'm sure there's been stories that you've seen where it just didn't work out, and that probably, you know, kind of breaks your heart. But for a lot of these kids, this provides this alternative and this this way for them to see through to getting that diploma.
Yeah, and you never know when they're going to come back through the doors, which is what we're trying to do with drop-in day, and become one of those success stories. We have a young man at Yakus right now who 2 years ago he decided to take a trip cross-country. He grew up a lot during that time, and he is so enthusiastic to be back now. And he's going to graduate, hopefully, a little bit early.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, and I was able to talk to students, one of whom is here, and we're going to talk to in just a moment, who had absolutely inspirational stories, had stumbling blocks that I kind of wouldn't be able to imagine how I would have handled that at the age of 16 or 17, and yet found this alternative because of the work you guys are doing. So thanks for the work you're doing, and I appreciate it, and thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
All right, thanks so much. We're going to be talking to a couple of really great success stories in just a second here as we continue this program on dropout and helping kids drop back in.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're
lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe.
Ah, Chuck Berry. Celebrating school days. The kids these days, they can't get enough of the Chuck Berry. It's only about 50-year-old, that music. Well, we're talking to two really cool young women in the studio with me right now. Celila, who also is known as Crystal, but Celila, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good.
Thanks so much. And I got to talk to you at JDHS the other day, and thanks for talking to me before and being on KXLL, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you today. And then also Daniela. And Daniela, you go to Yakutsk. We were just talking to the principal and to Christy from Yakutsk, and thanks so much for coming in and just talking to us a little bit about your guys' experience and even some friends' experience and things like that. Daniela, I'll just start with you. You had a really unique situation where you found yourself kind of having to overcome a big stumbling block, and you're able to find the Yakutsk. How did you kind of take me through that a little bit? You can give whatever detail you want, but tell me a little bit about kind of where you found yourself and how you ended up finding Yakutsk and figuring out an alternative that got you to where you're back in school and working on a diploma.
Thank you, Andy. It kind of was like I had an entire life change. My whole life kind of fell apart, and I was a honor roll, straight A, 4.0 student, never missed class, never, you know, ditched school, and my whole life kind of flipped around, and that's happened a couple of times in my life, but in particular this one, and I stopped going to school. I was already living independently at the time, and I was homeless when this particular moment in time, and I just stopped going to school, and I would sign myself out of school whenever I felt like it. I would go to one class and leave for the day. I would run out of the class crying or screaming because I was really upset and depressed, and I couldn't handle it, couldn't handle the stress. And my savior was the librarian at Thunder Mountain with the school I went to, which is Rondi Miller. She took me in, and she completely just saved my life in every way you can think of. And
that's great. I mean, that she ended up being that connection and that person who kind of was a mentor and that person that maybe knew about some of the programs that might be able to help you in your situation, huh?
She definitely did. She helped me find the housing where I live, and that was also contributed to by Yakutsk. And how I found Yakutsk was I ran into a friend of mine at a college fair at Thunder Mountain that I was helping out at. And I came up to her and I was like, oh, hey, how are you? I thought you moved or something. And she's like, oh, no, I go to Yakutsk now. And I was like, oh, the alternative high school? And everybody knows that stigma. Oh, pregnant teens are drug addicts. Right. So it's only people that go there. And she was telling me about it and telling me about the environment and how it works. And I was like, that sounds so perfect to me right now. Because at that time in my life when everything had fallen apart, I was taking 9 super advanced classes.
You'd put a lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah, and I was also trying to graduate a year early. And it was just a humongous mess. And I was under a lot of stress, and I was working, and I talked to her about it, and after a half hour conversation with her, I ran into Rondi's office, the librarian, and I was like, I'm going to Yakutsk, and she's like, wait a second, what? Think this through. And I was like, nope, hear me out. So I told her my reasoning, and she was like, if this is what you think you want to do. And the following week, or maybe the week after that, I know it was Halloween. Halloween was my first day. We all dressed up. This is Penguin. And I started Yakutsk, and it has been just the best school, best experience. They have molded to me, molded as an individual, and they're super supportive.
So you said you dressed as a penguin the first day you went to school?
I dressed as a penguin. Everybody thought I was crazy.
So your life changed the day you dressed as a penguin.
The day I dressed as a penguin. It's my favorite animal.
Well, that's a great we'll talk a little bit more about that. But see, Lila, I want to just talk to you as well. Now, you're someone who hasn't necessarily had huge stumbling blocks personally in your school career. You've done pretty well. But I think a lot of your friends kind of – you've seen it quite a bit, right? You've kind of seen that. Just tell me a little bit about the – maybe a couple of patterns you've seen happen to friends, like where it looks like, okay, now they're going towards where they might, you know, they're getting these stumbling blocks where they're going to maybe drop out.
Yeah, I guess I just seen this pattern where like one friend would say somebody's talking crap about me or somebody's disrespecting me or some kind of, you know, line
drama.
Like that.
A little drama, right?
Then, you know, some friends get sucked into it. Some friends say forget about it. But the friends that get sucked into it get, you know, too into it to a point where they're like, they don't want to talk to anybody. They can't trust anyone. And then I see it from there as they're going to keep, like, they're going to keep coming to school just to see, you know, like, what's going to happen. What is this person going to say? All of that. And, like, I try to stay away from that. But I get sucked into it. I got sucked into it a lot my freshman year. But
so that's interesting. I mean, so in other words, that whole dynamic of like who's saying what about who becomes the most important thing, and the actual school and the schoolwork and that stuff just kind of goes by the wayside, and you're not even concentrating on that at all because you're so involved with this kind of social part of what school is.
Well, it's because it's like, to me, it's like a small town. So you're going to try and have as much friends as you can. And, like, if you ever got into, like, an argument or somebody try to step up to you and say, like, all this stuff, like, you'll have your friends back and all of that. But to me, I just feel like it's, you know, a bunch of nonsense. I feel like it's important to have friends, but there's a point where you're going to say, you know, you have to stop. This is really not that important.
Like, you're the most important thing. You got to take care of number one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I think that a lot of times and kids I've talked to, that thing can happen where you have a group of friends, and then all of a sudden you kind of feel like you're ostracized from that group, or like they don't want to be friends anymore. And all of a sudden you feel really alone, right? Yeah. You feel like school's the last place you want to be because there's this whole thing and you just don't want to be there anymore. It's easier just to say, forget it, I'm not going.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so have you had friends that have kind of gone through a period like that but have kind of recovered and gotten back into it? And
yeah, I know a few friends. They go to Yakuza. Like, they went through something like that or something towards that. It's either with friends or with family.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've seen them struggle a lot. And to be honest, I thought they weren't going to make it. Like, I thought they were going to drop out and just be that, you know, person like that just hangs around and just does nothing. But I've seen a few friends come back to school, go to Yakus, and, you know, try to get their grades up, and I'm really proud of them. So
yeah, that's great. I think you're right. You know, it's admirable, isn't it,
to have
especially someone like you, Daniela, who's had this period where it's like, you know, there's lots of us who would just say, well, I'm giving up, you know, and instead you kind of found this way of not giving up, and I think that's great. So tell me a little bit about your plans for the future now that you've kind of gone through this period and you're at Yakuza. So now what's going on?
Well, currently I'm attending Yakuza. I could have graduated last year because, as I'm sure as everyone knows, Yakuza has a faster pace and you can get more credits more quickly. And I came back this year with the intentions of doing everything I could to get the most scholarships I could, because I live independently and I'm not rich. I don't have a college fund or a trust fund.
Money is good.
Yes. Free money is good. That's scholarships. So take advantage of them. So I came back this year and I'm taking a full load. I'm taking some classes at JDHS that are not offered at Yakuza. There's that option. You can always do the dual enrollment. And I will be graduating from Yakuza. And I have managed to maintain my 4.0. And I should be getting awarded the Governor's Performance Scholarship, UA Scholars, among other scholarships at the end of this year when I graduate. And I plan on going to UAS next fall and staying there for 2 to 3 years and probably study abroad for a year and go to UAA, finish up my degree, however long that takes, in pediatric nursing.
There you go. Cool. You've got that kind of path laid out for you. That's great. Do you have something along that lines? Do you have aspirations for stuff, or are you just kind of trying to figure out what you want to do still?
Well, you have everything set up. That's, that was, like, really awesome. Basically, the only thing that's in my mind is to get my diploma for high school. I mean, I'm the youngest in my family of six. It's my parents and my four older brothers, and I'm the only one that's going to be graduating high school in my family, so that alone is just, you know, enough
it's
to
great.
Push me on. Besides that, I've been getting UAS credits from a camp called Path to Excellency. Go Belt funds it, I think, and I've been getting a lot of college credits. I have six college credits now, and I'm just looking forward to UAS, maybe. If not, I'll probably go abroad.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. But definitely thinking about that college as a definite possibility for when you graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks to both of you. You're both great success stories already. Already you are. You've already done great stuff and totally inspirational. I really have just... it's been so great to be able to talk to you guys the past couple of days. So thanks again for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And
thanks for all the work you've been doing. We've been talking to folks today all day long about the dropout issue in Juneau. And this is all leading up to our drop-in day that's happening at Zach Gordon Youth Center. That's going to be happening Saturday. Starts at 1 o'clock. It's at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. It's going to be free health screenings, free food, free guidance services, and even door prizes like cool tickets up to Eagle Crest and bus passes and all kinds of cool stuff, fun stuff to be able to get. All encouraging people who maybe have been in that situation of dropping out to consider dropping back in, to consider all of the resources that are available to you that allow you to get back into school and allow you to get back on track with getting that diploma, which, as both of these students have just talked about, is that really first important step towards having a lot more choices in your life and a lot more ability to get out there and have a lot of freedom and do exactly what you want to do in life. And I want to thank all of my guests today who've talked to us today about this dropout program, from Lori Scandling to Frida Westman, Marina Goodwin, and Crystal and Daniela, and also Sarah Moreno and Christy Smith for coming in. We're going to go to NPR Headlines coming up next.